Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for August 12th, 2012. I'm your host, David McLaughlin, and joining me right now, my co-host, Tim Shiflett. Welcome, Tim.
Well, good evening, sir.
Yeah, good to have you here. I'll kind of set up the show here in just a minute. Danny Grant, who is running for Congress in Northwest Georgia, is going to join us, talking about his congressional run in the 14th District. Even though this is a new number, in a lot of ways, I don't think this one's considered the new district. Would you, Tim?
Oh, no. No, this is, everything that was drawn up here, I think, was probably drawn with the general idea of getting that ninth district over there and making it very Republican. Wouldn't you think everything up here fed off of that, David?
Yes, because I think your state senator, Jeff Mollison, wanted an open seat but didn't get it. Half the district's what Tom Graves, the scandal-ridden current congressman, brought over, and then another half of the district, which you and I already lived in, was part of Phil Gingrich's old district. So it's kind of a mesh of those two. And we'll talk to Mr. Grant about his run for the 14th Congressional District and, you know, how he's running against Tom Graves, who frankly has a lot of financial scandals going on right now. And so
yes,
we'll chit-chat about that. And then some other things we'll talk about after that interview, and maybe before, depending on how the calls come in, is the Ryan pick. Paul Ryan was selected as the nominee on a Saturday morning. Now, I don't know about you, Tim, but I always thought Saturday morning was good for two things, pro wrestling and cartoons. So I didn't know much politics went on Saturday morning, so I kind of thought that was a curious time to do politics. But, of course, we're in a new TV age, so I guess Cartoon Network, we're going to cover it anyway. and so that's we'll discuss that. And then Washington Post came up with a chart that shows where you go on the Internet and what that says about your political leanings. We'll discuss that. Also, Missouri had elections last Tuesday, and Florida has elections coming up this Tuesday, so we'll discuss that. And one final thing before we get on with our guest. Yesterday, the Democratic Party of Georgia had their meeting to select new DNC officers to send to Washington for meetings, and I guess Charlotte and other places as well for our state. And Wendy Davis, who's been on this show countless times as a guest and a co-host, won a spot on the DNC. And, of course, in the past we've had people like Paige Gleason come on and tell us what's going on with the DNC, and she's no longer on it. So I guess Wendy might be willing to fill that role for us. But first off, for her, congratulations.
Absolutely. Wendy is a great person, a great Democrat. She's been a longtime worker for the party. She's worked in politics at every level, in campaigns from the local level all the way to the presidential level. Wendy Davis knows politics, and she's a credit to the Democratic Party. And I'm just, if you're listening out there, Wendy, congratulations to you, lady. You deserved it.
Yeah, we'll have her on sooner than later to discuss things, since, of course, she'll now go to Charlotte and be at the convention and maybe her inside person on a lot of those things. Well, right now, let's go ahead and welcome in our guest, Danny Grant. Welcome, Danny.
Thank you.
Yes, we've been kind of setting
up what y'all are saying about Wendy. She is a great Democrat and a great politician. She'll be a great asset to the convention.
Amen.
Yes. I know she's actually, you know, advised your campaign a little bit already, and
she has.
Always willing to do that.
And she's a great worker.
Yes. Go ahead, and for the folks that don't know much about you, give us a little biography about your life, Danny.
All right. My name's Danny Grant. I I graduated from high school in 1976 from Dade County High School. And, well, back then it was called Northwest Georgia Vocational Comprehensive High School. So they got it smartened up a little bit and went back to Dade, which was just a little short, sweet name. And I married Gina Roberts in 1983 after I'd completed electrical apprenticeship and became an electrician. And we've been married since 1983. And we had 8 children together. We've worked through the community. All 8 of my children have attended the Catoosa County Public Schools in Ringo. And they've gone on to Dalton College. And all five of them that's graduated from high school have gone to Dalton and then from Dalton to other schools. So I'm a big proponent of local public education. And then I've since then completed my contractor's license. And I'm working as a project estimator for Teams Electric in Ringo, Georgia. I've done electric work since the day I've got out of high school. My father was an electrician. We're a middle class, working class family, and we've been in and out of business before, so we know about starting businesses and having businesses and trying to keep them going. But we also know about the importance of the worker and making the middle class strong again.
Yes. Well, Danny, it's really interesting. I think, of course, the number one issue that comes up is the economy.
Right.
And what an interesting contrast you and Tom Graves make.
Yes.
The two things we hear about with the economy is the home building has slowed down and, of course,
right,
bank failures. And Tom Graves is involved with banks, and you are a contractor electrician, know about building homes. So it's kind of like two people that are involved directly with this financial situation, so you each bring a different perspective, and one's more just regular folks, and one's maybe more the people that got the bailouts. What do you think your background in home building and electricity brings to the race?
Well, I know that you've got to make things move, and you got to make things go, and being in the construction market, you also know you just can't stand on the sidelines and say, I don't like what the carpenters are doing, or I don't like what the plumbers are doing, and not get nothing done. So you have to go to Washington with the attitude that I want things done. I want things to move forward so people can have jobs and we can move into a more productive economy that's moving forward with people working. And we have to rebuild the industrial base and the manufacturing base of this country so people can afford houses and people can afford new cars and a lifestyle that's going up and not just where we're just planed off because we've bankrupt everything and now we're trying to pay all that off and get all that going, but that we're moving forward with industry and jobs and road building and getting things moving forward.
Yes. Well, of course, Tim Shiflett's on here with me. I'm going to let Tim ask a few questions. And, of course, Tim, since it's you and I tonight, feel free to ask multiple issue questions or anything else.
All right.
Thank you. Hey, Danny, how are you doing tonight, sir?
Hey, Tim. I'm doing good. Enjoying this great weather up here in Ringo.
Oh, yeah. It's wonderful, ain't it?
It is.
David and I were talking right before we went on the air, and we were talking about the makeup of this new district. It is essentially a new district created by redistricting, and part of it was in the old 9th, and part of it was in Dr. Gingrich's old district. The district has 12 individual counties. Now, other than the fact that they've been thrown together into this district, you've traveled around the district a lot already. What bonds the counties in this district together? What do they all have in common that you've seen?
Well, what I've seen so far, and I've been to a lot of political forums all over this district, is that all of them are struggling with this budget mess, and the commissioners are needing money to move their counties forward and to get projects going in their counties. And that's one thing I really would like to do is work with every commissioner in every county as to what's important to their county. To me, politics is local. And we've got to go into these individual counties with, and meet with each commissioner and say, what do you need to move forward? Murray County has a lot of plant closings going on. And Whitfield County has a lot of plant closings going on. Chattooga County, on the other hand, has opened up a couple of plants. So they might need roads where some of the other counties need more help attracting businesses and being able to get federal grants and federal stuff in place to help them attract what they see that they need for their individual county. And you know, you go to these people and you see these county commissioners, and they're really kind of saying, well, we really don't have any money to do anything because everything's so short and so tight. But, and that's where I believe that the federal government has to come in and help counties rebuild their manufacturing base.
And when we're talking about jobs in the 14th District, for our listeners who do not live in this district, essentially what types of jobs are the backbone of the 14th District?
Well, it's textiles. I mean, you can go, it's textile production. And as I went and estimated jobs, yesterday I was in, or Friday, I was in Bartow County estimating the job. So textiles spread up and down the length of this district. Now, like Catoosa County and Paulding County are more bedroom-type communities, but they all have textile plants inside of each county. And so we've got to give some help to the textile manufacturers in each county and in the whole district to improve the job situation.
And when you travel around the district, Danny, what is the individual voter telling you that's on their mind as far as the number one issue? Is it the economy and jobs?
That's the main thing we talk about, is the economy and jobs and getting things moving again so that people can have a better lifestyle, start lifestyle moving up. And as they get pay raises, the taxes that they pay goes up and goes into the school system and helps the school system and helps the county commissioners. And so we've got to get the economy rolling and manufacturing rolling again to help move this economy and the counties forward.
And I got to ask you one more question, because I'm an old political worker, an old political hack, and then I'll throw it back to David for some questions. But this is a very large district and area. How in this world do you physically campaign in such a large district? Isn't that just almost impossible to do?
Well, it is, and it is hard. But what I've tried to do is, because I did announce my candidacy late, I've tried to go to each county and meet with each committee in that county to build a base. And now, as we go into the fall campaign, after Labor Day, we're going to really rely on our local committee members to help us get the word out. And because we are low budget, we're very low budget, because I hadn't had any big donors step up yet, but I'm waiting on them. But we are having to rely heavily on our individual Democratic committees. But the thing that's got me is the excitement. You know, everybody says we're down, we're not relevant anymore. But every county I go to, those people are excited and moving, wanting to move forward and wanting to get in there and go.
There,
so it really
go.
Kind of revs you up to go see them.
All right. David?
Yes. Well, Danny, you mentioned that you are from Dade County. And one thing I found was interesting, I was watching a show called How the States Got Their Shape, and they talked about how the Georgia Quarter had Dade County taken off, and they talked about it being the independent state of Dade. Is this really a real thing that people in Dade County know about, that Dade County may have wanted to be part of, away from part of Georgia, or is this just some kind of folklore that's really not true?
No, no, it did happen. And what happened is at the start of the Civil War, Dade didn't think that the state of Georgia was going to succeed from the Union quick enough. So we went ahead and succeeded on our own. And formed and formed our own state and became the state of Dade. And we really didn't come back into the state of Georgia till 1958. So we fought the Civil War a long time.
I just had heard that story and thought, well, you know, I mean, they were kind of unclear on some things, and so I figured somebody from there would know. Well, Danny, you mentioned education, your kids going through public schools, and I know that the 14th Congressional Chair is a GAE representative, and you were talking about different counties having different needs. In Timms County, I think, Tim, is this correct? They still take most Mondays off and do not
hold
school.
Yeah, we're still on the four-day school week because of budget constraints.
Right.
Yes. Well, part of the president's stimulus package, a lot of it went into education, and I don't know how much got used to cutting back on some of that in Chattooga County, but, of course, the man you're running has voted against that, and I know it did help with some teacher furlough days and things like that. Until these state budgets come back, and a lot of it is a state or even a local issue, how much help do you think the federal government could give so we can avoid things like 4-day weeks of school? Because I don't think you can find too many people that think Chattooga County taking Mondays off is a good thing.
Well, and you're right. The federal government has to find a way to help keep these teachers in the classrooms and to help with these local education budgets. You know, a lot of people just want to eliminate the Department of Education, but there's a ton of work that needs to be done here on bringing budget money back and making sure that the teachers are able to stay in the classroom. The other night I was at a political forum in Dade County, and they were talking about how many teachers they were cutting and how it looks like they'll cut more next year. And we've got to be able to keep our teacher-student ratio down. I taught apprentice school in electrical apprentice program. I taught AC and DC theory for a few years, and a couple of years I had really large classes, and that really, you just kind of lost control. When the class was under 20, it seemed like we could cover the material and cover it thoroughly and move on. But when we got up to 27 and 30 and 32 one year, it just seemed like there was confusion. So the federal government has to somehow come in and help with the teacher-student ratio and keeping and the students in class, and making it a 5-day week where it's fluid through the week and you can get the material covered. Because I believe there's some very hardworking teachers out there who want this material done and want the education continued. So we need to support them in every way we can.
And obviously, as people get older, I mean, certainly college students, you could even make a case with block A-B scheduling that high schoolers can handle it. But, you know, younger kids, one day out of the classroom is not good. Also, parents, you know, looking at just somewhere to have their kids while they work.
Right.
You know, finding a third, you know, really if they work, okay, I'm going to work Monday through Friday. My kids will be at school. I can make a living. You know, that infringes on that. And they got to figure out how to just have child care that one day a week. And, of course, if somebody's operating child care, you're not going to be able to make money doing it one day a week either. So it's just kind of a mess for everybody involved. So I just know that that's something that come up and has not yet gone away, even though the economy's gotten some better. It hadn't trickled down into, I guess, state revenue rolls, which usually, you know, lag a year or two behind the others. Well, Tim, do you have any more issue or any questions? If not, we'll talk a little campaign and how people can help, Danny.
Okay, I do want to ask one more question, Danny, because I think it's something that you've talked about some on your site, and it's something that's close to your heart. There's no doubt, statistics show, and nobody would argue with it, that there is a growing economic divide in this country between the haves and have-nots, between management and labor, and it's not getting better, it's getting worse. What can be done about that, in your opinion?
Well, that to me is where we have to come back to making the American manufactured good, the American built product, to where it has the advantage in our markets to be consumed and to be made here and bought here and paid for here, and not with money that we borrowed from another country. The small business owners also are, you know, they're struggling to find a place to sell their product and to expand their business. And we've got to be able to bring the demand for American products back to America, made by Americans and purchased by Americans. I worked on a stimulus job, and it was a good idea and a good job, and we got in there and got to working, and the light fixtures came out of Honduras, the conduit came from Brazil, the wire came from Mexico, the switchgear came from Europe. So the part of the economy that could have really helped the whole economy, if those had been American-made products, the whole economy would have been helped. And like in Lithonia, Georgia, there used to be a light fixture plant, and most of that's gone now. And so we have to get back to having American products made and sold in America to create a demand for business and for labor. And so that we're both the small businessman, unless you have if you're a small business and you don't have a connection to a foreign company and cheap labor pools and shipping lines and truck transport lines, you're not at the advantage now. But we need to turn that around where the advantage is to the person who's going to manufacture goods in America with American labor and sold to Americans. You know, we're expanding the port in Savannah, and I really don't believe we're expanding that port so we can ship more stuff out. I believe it's going to be so we can bring larger ships in. So to me, we need to make it where American products are going out on those ships as much as they're coming in, because we have to have American products bought and sold here, and that's when we had a strong middle class. That's when we had people moving up who could move, work for a few years and then start their own business or for a way to move up in this economy. And that's where I believe that we need to head.
And just a quick follow-up question to that. Has the failure to protect American jobs and American products, is that failure a failure of our government?
It is. It started with the government. It was government policy to take those protections off. It'll have to be government, somebody working in government, working for the working people, to put those protections back on.
Okay, so, well said. Thank you, sir. David?
Yes. Well, Danny, you were talking about this being a low-budget campaign and what you're doing. If somebody's heard you and they want to help your cause, what are the ways they can do that?
On my website, DannyGrantForCongress.com, I have a son-in-law that set my website up very well, and there's a link on there for to help Facebook, and they can contact me, and I'll be glad to give them information as to what they can do for me, because I do need a lot done.
Yeah, and so if people logged on to DannyGrantForCongress.com, would they be able to contribute right there as well?
They can.
Good.
That link on there is called Get Involved link, and if they'll get on that Get Involved link, I'm kind of going to copy Ron Paul a little bit here. I need people to make their own signs and put in their yard, Yes, if you can contribute, you can contribute right on there. You contribute through PayPal, and we've had an account set up with them. So there's a contribution link there as well.
Yes. Well, Danny, thanks for coming on, and best of luck to you throughout the campaign.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Well, good luck. And remember, get off your fanny and vote for Danny.
There we go.
There we go.
Yes.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Good night, sir.
Bye-bye.
Well, Tim, we got another caller, although the number was somewhat familiar. Catherine, would that be you?
Yes, I'm so sorry, you guys. I'm so sorry. I don't have a good excuse.
Well,
so,
as long as you're not avoiding being on with Danny Grant, who was just our guest, there any excuse will do other than that. So.
No, I'm so sorry I missed him. I had questions for him and everything, but.
Yeah.
Anyway,
well, Tim and I have been holding on the fort. And I know you are probably excited knowing that once we spoke with Danny, we get into a little national politics first, and then we'll get into some regional politics. And, of course, Tim and I did get to mention that they announced the pick of Paul Ryan on a Saturday morning, what I would call prime news time. So we kind of mentioned that already, but none of us have given our opinion on this thing. So, Catherine, so people can hear your voice, what's your thoughts on the Paul Ryan pick?
I was surprised. Two white guys, two kind of boring white guys, doesn't seem like that big, the big kind of splash that we all expected. I'm not sure what I expected, but it wasn't Paul Ryan. And I think it doesn't seem good to me. It doesn't seem like a good, solid, we're going to win pick, but I might be wrong.
Yeah, I think Tim and I talked about it before we got on there, and I was underwhelmed too. Tim, now you hadn't been on the air talking about it. What was your thoughts?
Well, it is an out-of-the-box type pick. It is risky. This guy is a lightning rod, as we all know, especially with the Ryan plan, which features his idea, for instance, to turn Medicare into a voucher program. A lot of Democrats were actually hoping that Ryan would be the pick. So I don't know what that says about it. I think Romney might have looked at the race that Hyde has developed and thought he needed to change the game. I think he might have been pressured by some conservatives who wanted either Representative Ryan or someone like Marco Rubio. To be fair, on the upside, Ryan is young. He's popular with the base. Ryan might help out a bit in Wisconsin, and the hope is that Ryan will help to change the present conversation. Now, the downside, I think he's going to be easy to attack. He could wind up hurting Romney more than helping him, and Catherine has already mentioned it. It again reinforces the Republicans as the white guy's only party. And this Ryan plan, by the way, which is a wedge issue, it's now the Romney-Ryan plan. And
exactly.
The final thing about him is he is untested nationally. He's never even run statewide in his home state. So we'll just have to see where it goes. Now, David, here's the cute thing for you. They've already looked at how people are Googling to search for Ryan. And the second most popular Google item is people are trying to find a picture of him with no shirt on. I have no idea what that says, and I'm not going to touch it with a 10-foot pole. Maybe one of y'all will.
Well, I certainly could care less about Googling that. Maybe Catherine, maybe that's the one upside Catherine could see in him.
No.
But I'll tell you, the pick is just dreadful. Maybe, you know, like you said, he's younger and probably better looking than the average politico, maybe. And so they could, maybe he didn't, you know, he's good for direct mail, possibly. But when it comes right down to it, I mean, this is a guy we've been running against in special elections for just, you know, up in New York and some other places and winning. I mean, we would run against Paul Ryan. I would liken this to us picking Nancy Pelosi. Us as Democrats, we may like her, but we know that she's a lightning rod for the other side. So if you're trying to win an election in which you have to convince swing voters or people that voted for President Obama last time, those are the people you have to move. Why in the world are you picking a lightning rod that the other party has run against successfully? In another article that came out today, it said that Paul Ryan may make it even harder to win Florida. And if you're trying to win this election, to me, you want to figure out how to win Florida if you're the Republican Party. And they're taking it and they're finding a guy that could be very unpopular with older white voters. And so if Romney starts to lose those older white voters really all around the nation, but in particular in Florida, that's just going to make the situation worse. And I would think one rule of a vice presidential pick, do no harm. I mean, even if you don't swing a lot of points in the favor, you don't make the problem worse. And I think in some ways this guy could. Catherine, sound like you're going to respond?
I agree with that. I think that if, depending on how the, you know, messaging comes from the Democrat, from the DNC and the National Democrats, it could hurt him with seniors, with, you know, that middle group, the baby boomers who are taking care of parents, or anticipate taking care of parents and also anticipate, you know, having to be on Medicare at some point, you know, in the near future. I think it hurts them, hurts both Romney and the GOP with that group. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think that that this could hurt him, hurt them,
yeah,
hurt the National Party.
So much of the response has been negative, and one of the first stories also came out. Yes, Paul Ryan can run for re-election at the same time, and that story always comes out, but it came out even faster this time. It was kind of like, oh, don't worry, Paul Ryan will still be around after he loses for vice president, was almost the subliminal message sent there. Tim, what do you read more of the conservative blogosphere, and obviously it seems like he's popular among the base, the people that were going to already vote for Romney. What have people been saying as far as, like, where does this get us with the undecideds?
Well, you got to remember that if you go to the blogosphere, you got the true believers. And in this particular election, I've noticed on the liberal blogosphere and on the conservative blogosphere, each side thinks that their guy's already got the thing won, first of all. The pick of Ryan just reinforces it in a lot of them's mind. I was surprised, however, to see how many of them are remaining neutral on this. Even though that is a conservative blog, I blog on, a lot of these people are old hack campaign workers and stuff like I am, albeit a lot of them in the other party. And they understand, for instance, that no vice presidential candidate has made a huge splash in a positive way since probably Lyndon Johnson in 1960. Old Gore helped a little bit, maybe, in Tennessee, and just reinforced that youthful image that Clinton was trying to project. You remember the posters, Young Guns, and all of that. And, of course, we know what John McCain was trying to do by picking Sarah Palin. He's trying to kickstart a desperate situation. And as you said so eloquently before, David, he correctly chose a woman. He just chose the wrong woman. But you know, this is interesting. Get this. For the first time, there is no Protestant on the Republican ticket. We have a Mormon, we have a Catholic. We have no Protestant for the first time. I wonder what the Southern Baptists are going to think about that. It's just a thought.
Yeah, that makes basically President Obama would be the only one of the four that's a Protestant.
And a fourth
of the Republicans probably didn't believe that, but they're just wrong.
There's another thing, too, a new poll out of Republican voters. Now, this is the average voter, not the policy geeks like us. 36% of them don't know enough about Paul Ryan to formulate an opinion. Now, we're talking about 36% of Republican voters nationwide. And this guy's one of the rising stars in their party, and he's been all over the news for 2 years. But that shows you how much the average voter tunes in, right?
Yeah, there's just a lot of people that aren't tuned in at all, and that's going to create apathy on both sides. Well, one thing I always think you should do is if you say, hey, you messed up, I always like to say, what should you have done? And I'll go ahead and tell you, when I heard about this pick, I was so glad. There were two people that were on Romney's shortlist, if you will, that I was really hoping he didn't pick. One was Marco Rubio, because probably he would have been good with the base and all, and that would have given the same things as Ryan, but he is Hispanic and he is from Florida. And, you know, obviously, if this helps us win Florida and we were to somehow give away Wisconsin, which I don't think is going to happen, I'd take that trade any day of the week. But then also the fact that he might help a little bit in states like Colorado and Nevada. I was glad that Romney didn't pick him. Also, Senator from New Hampshire, Kelly Oit, you know, she's apparently a smart female. Kind of, you know, she's also female like Sarah Palin, but intelligent. She knows the issues. Mike could have swayed a small state like New Hampshire, even though I think Romney's going to need more than just those four electoral votes. But to me, those would have been two far superior picks, and I'm really glad he did pick Paul Ryan. Catherine or Tim, do either one of y'all have people that y'all are kind of glad, it'd be us being Democrats, that Romney didn't pick?
Well, I agree with you. I haven't really thought about this specifically, but I would say Marco Rubio, partly because, you know, obviously because of Florida. To a lesser extent, the Latino vote, because I don't think he is all that popular in the Latino community, though, you know, sometimes it's just the fact that he would be a Latino, people might vote for him. I'm sure there's others that would, if you mentioned them, I would say, oh, yeah, I'm glad you didn't pick him, but... I think Paul Ryan is a hard sell. So I think for that reason, I'm somewhat glad that he was chosen. But the only other one, the first one that comes to mind would be Marco Rubio. I'm glad he didn't pick him.
Yeah. Tim, anybody, you're kind of glad. Hey, I'm glad he didn't pick him.
Yeah, I'm glad he didn't pick Rob Portman, because Portman might have brought the state of Ohio along with him. Plus, Portman had a lot of experience and could have given Romney some foreign policy chops, for instance, that he still does not have. I mean, all of Ryan's work has been on the domestic level, and that's what he's known for. And Ohio is a state, well, the Republicans cannot lose Ohio. That's all there is to it. There's a reason that they have never won an election without Ohio. It's just too electorally important. And the other one I was looking at was the governor of Virginia, McDonnell. I'm glad he wasn't picked as well. Because not only could he have brought Virginia, but his pick might have affected that Virginia Senate race that I think is very winnable for King there. So that's who I was looking at, David.
Yeah, and that's a good point, because also Wisconsin is a Senate seat in play, particularly if Tommy Thompson's the nominee. For whatever reason, he continues to be popular there from his time as governor. And so that's a Senate seat that once they have their nominee set, will might be in play or not in play, and Paul Ryan might help, at least in his district, and affect that seat. But then Virginia would be the same kind of thing in a place where a guy has run statewide. Well, I mean, we'll see how it fleshes out, and maybe just the fact that Romney will be in the news, this may be a boost to him in the polls, but even Fox News has him down 9 points in the polls, so it'll take quite a boost. And it'll have to take a boost that lasts. I mean, this is something. And if he doesn't somehow close this gap and get a lead, now we're not using just Rasmussen polls only. I mean, we're using the whole gamut of polls to get averages. Romney's really never had a lead in this race. I mean, even candidates like Michael Dukakis had leads at times in the process. And, you know, Romney's yet to have one. And I don't know how much longer he can last till people just kind of give up on him. And then if somebody like Gary Johnson might get more votes than he could have otherwise, because if we'll see it as a lost cause, they may say, well, I'm going to make a statement and, you know, vote Libertarian or something. Or Constitution Party. Actually, there was an article, I don't think we got to it. Virgil Goode, a congressman from Virginia, is the Constitution Party candidate on that state's ballot. I mean, there's a thing where if it's a 4-point race and Goode somehow gets 3 or 4, it could turn, you know, to where that's, you know, state's not very close. So all that's a factor to look at.
Well, I mean.
Go ahead, Tim.
Right now he's 5 points behind. And the trend has been going against him. He's going to get a bump. It's going to happen because he's dominating the news with this pick. It's going to last a few days, and then it's going to settle again. He's going to have to turn the trend toward him. You're right, David. He's just going to run into electoral math sooner or later, right?
Yeah, I mean,
absolutely.
This doesn't
give
a bump. The convention doesn't give him a bump. Then he has to just basically, you know, hope you know, the president falls asleep during the debate or something. I mean, he's just looking for some freakish prayer at that point. So that's where we'll go from there. Well, we'll go ahead and shift gears. We've got about 18 minutes left in the show. I saw this early in the week. Probably should have sent it to you even earlier, but Engage DC, internet political firm that I think the guy that ran it did a lot of George W. Bush's internet stuff. They have looked at the politics of social web, and the Washington Post picked up on this, and it looked at people, what their favorite websites say about your politics. And it seems like that there's just this continuing thing where everything you do in life, to somebody, is a political statement. We've talked about TV shows, I guess which restaurant you eat at, what type of car you drive. Now where you go on the internet can be a political statement. Or I guess at times this might be the bipartisanness in you. Of course, we know Catherine and I are willing to watch Amazing Race, even though it's such a Republican show. So I guess we know how the other half lives as they travel the country, which is kind of, I'm sorry, the globe, which is kind of different. But anyway, this chart, if you go to the Fix on Washington Post, you can see it, or you can go to EngageDC.com. And I think it's one of the top stories. It has this little grid where it has high political engagement, low political engagement, likely Obama, likely Romney. And, of course, it looks like if you use Facebook, YouTube, Pandora, you're just a regular American. Man, they're smack dab in that thing. But, for instance, if you use Skype, you're slightly more Republican for some reason. And if you like to Google things, you might be slightly more Democratic. I had no clue that Democrats were more likely to Google things than Republicans. And Republicans are apparently more likely to tweet things. This is all news to me, but, I mean, there's some real, you know, interesting things. Next time I go on eBay to look for a deal on something, man, it's way up in the Republican corner. I don't know what I'll be doing these days. Y'all have all looked at this chart. Tim, what were the surprises on this chart? What did you make of this thing?
Well, first of all, I guess it's based on people's likes on Facebook, is it?
or something
like
that.
At one point, Tim, I gathered but, that, and another time I gathered it might be just what you go to. I mean, who in the heck likes PayPal, Tim? I mean, that's okay,
yeah,
I
really.
Use it. Who cares?
But the reason I asked that is the first thing that jumped out at me is where is Twitter at on here?
Twitter
is
no bird.
A little bit to the right, but center.
Yes, it's the little bird. Just it's a little bit Romney about midpoint on political engagement.
Where's the little bird at?
It's a little big blue. It's a
blue. Oh, just
circle,
a little blue
bird.
Yeah. Okay. That's Twitter. Okay.
That's Twitter.
You know what? I don't know. I rarely pay attention to these things. First of all, to be honest with you, I'm looking here and I don't even know what half of these sites are. And I'm like you, I figured everybody used Google. So to me, that's the most surprising thing. Why would Google not be exactly dead slap dab right in the middle of this thing?
That, Tim, that's because if you look over on the right side, there is Bing. It's like Fox News and MSNBC. If you want to find something, you're conservative. You don't want that liberal filter of Google messing you up. You want a good link, and
never
you decide Bing, I guess. Honestly, I didn't know Bing was conservative, and I would have no problem using Bing if it came up to search for something. But it's more Republican, apparently. Catherine, what do you make of this thing?
Well, I think, you know, I'm always interested in these things just to see how, the array of things that someone will evaluate us all on. I mean, it's just kind of amazing to me. Like, so that's one thing. None of it really shocked me. I'm not shocked that Bing is to the right and Google is to the left. That doesn't really surprise me. It's not, you know, things like Yelp and Tumblr and Zillow, I don't understand why those would, I mean, those are all things that I use. I don't know why they would be, you know, such a big range of left versus right, but the thing that strikes me, and maybe it's just the way I'm looking at this, it seems like there's fewer things on the right than on the left, but the ones on the right are bigger. So, like, there's more people that, you know, play Farmville than, you know, use Spotify. It just seems, I don't know. But I'm always curious, but...
Yeah, honestly, I guess if you're spending your time playing Angry Birds, which is slightly Democratic, or Farmville, which is pretty heavy Republican, you're not very politically engaged. You can't even hardly get out and vote because you got to take care of your farm, or I don't even know what you do on Angry Birds. Do you kill them? Do you shoo them away? I've never played Angry Birds. I guess I'm not 12, you know.
Here's something called Zappos, and according to this, I'm supposed to be all over it. I don't even know what that is. What is that?
I think
that's
shoes.
It's
I've
shoes.
Never gone to
well,
that.
It's
one.
Not
that's
just
shoes,
shoes
isn't it?
But it's
I guess
mostly
it's
shoes.
For zapatos, which is shoes in Spanish or something.
Okay.
Yeah. And a lot of these things are just newer, because like only about a year ago did Spotify come into America. I actually use that as one of the few things, I guess, that that and Wikipedia and Google are the only things I guess I use even on the Democratic side. You know, Spotify's music, so it probably trends a little younger. My favorite finding, my most ironic finding, my favorite one was Wikipedia. Democrats apparently want to find out about things because, of course, Wikipedia is the online encyclopedia where you learn things. That was kind of good for us. And the most ironic one was Amazon. Because, of course, Amazon, just in the past week or two, the founder or CEO gave all this money to support gay marriage. And so you got all these Republican-leaning voters giving money to this guy so he can support gay marriage. They might need to find him a new book site. Catherine?
Well, that's interesting, too, because, Bing is a Microsoft product, and you know, I don't have, I'm not a huge Bill Gates fan for a variety of reasons, partly because I'm an Apple person, but he is, you know, a giant contributor to all kinds of progressive causes that I think a lot of Republicans wouldn't, if they looked closely, might not be so happy about. So I don't think this, I don't think these things are, and also Zappos is owned by Amazon. So what does that mean?
Yeah.
I don't think these are political choices, some of them.
Is there a practical application here, like with the cookies, you know, which track where people go? Would it help determine, I don't know, how candidates and campaigns, if they could get their hands on this info, could target these people as possible voters, contributors, or whatnot? Is
yeah,
that
I'm sure that, I'm sure that it could be used for Facebook ads.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and you could also use – a lot of these sites will have ads.
Uh-huh.
And what scares me these days is now when you Google something to search for, other websites that have, like, little Google links or, like, have the stuff you searched for, it's like, man, you're tracking everything I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The one that got me was eBay. I figured eBay would be smack dab in the middle because I thought everybody that – I didn't think eBay was a political thing. I mean, if you wanted to find something that you might want to find a discount on it because it's being resold and you don't care if it's been used or what have you, you can look for it on eBay. It's like the world's yard sale. But it's
guys,
highly polarized.
Look, I mean, I'm a guy that, you know, that spends half my day on a conservative blog. Like you, David, I check in on election projection and a lot of those conservative sites, Real Clear Politics and some of that. And I'm a New Deal liberal. So can you really track where people go on the Internet and totally determine their politics? Is that possible, Catherine?
No, but I don't think they're looking for us.
Oh,
they're looking for the, you know, they're looking for the not so engaged person who they might be able to persuade.
The undecided.
The undecided. Yeah.
So yeah, my favorite story. I find this all part of micro-targeting, which came out early in the 2000s. But my favorite story is I went down to the IBEW building, listened to a Democratic training in which they talked about micro-targeting. The presenter, and I think I know who it is, but I don't want to say the wrong one, he says, if you drive a Volvo and you do yoga as exercise, then you're a Democrat. And I'm driving home to Rome, Georgia, up on 75 North. I pull behind a Volvo with a yoga sticker, and on the other side it said George W. Bush for president. So I kind of thought, well, there's always an exception to the rule, and it didn't even take me an hour to find it, and I wasn't even looking for it. So I always kind of take that with a grain of salt. Well, guys, we have about 5 minutes. We got time for one more thing. And Missouri had their elections, and we've talked now for more than one show about how Claire McCaskill, incumbent senator of Missouri, is maybe the most vulnerable incumbent in the Senate, certainly on everybody's top three list, if you will. Well, the one challenger that she probably will have the easiest time against, Todd Akin, won the primary. He's the party favorite. Tim, how good do you think the chances get for Claire McCaskill with Todd Akin being the nominee instead of maybe one of the more swing voter-friendly candidates?
He's very conservative. The polls clearly showed that she runs a much more competitive race with him. That being said, I think she's still in some major trouble. Her own personal popularity is not high at all. Now, I want to see what the new polls do when they consolidate, you know, with just him and her in the race.
and see how it looks then. If it's close, boy, yeah, she's got a real chance. But if this thing settles in like it's a five or six point lead for him, I think she's still in dreadful trouble.
Yeah, and she's also another one that probably had to be real happy about the Paul Ryan pick, because now she can kind of run more and more against the
right.
Ryan plan, because that probably
right.
going to hard sell him being in the House.
Congressional Democrats are
state.
The happiest.
Now she can run against that.
Congressional
yeah.
people are the happiest Democrats in the country tonight.
Yeah, and so that comes into play. Catherine, your thoughts on the Missouri Senate race?
Well, I think this makes money that much more important in that race. I think Aiken's got to raise a lot of money, and I'm sure McCaskill's probably got a pretty good war chest and probably now will have access to more. So I think it's really going to come down to, you know, persuasion via television and other, you know, expensive strategies, whether it's door-to-door or, you know, canvassing or whatever. But I think there's going to be a lot of money spent in Missouri on that race.
Yeah, and one thing that we'll have to have our friends from Political Mo come back sometime and talk to us about that race. But Kansas City and St. Louis are just so huge in that state. If you've never been through it, you come up to, you know, you cross over the Mississippi River and you come to this gigantic city, St. Louis, and you drive through it, and the exurbs go on and on and on, and eventually you get out of the exurbs and you get into farmland, and it continues on for quite a while, and then you start to kind of rise over a hill and you start seeing exurb in Kansas City, you see Arrowhead Stadium, and then you leave the state. And there's a few other little population centers here and there, but even like where the University of Missouri is in Columbia, it's just not a very big town. So how does Aiken and McCaskill play in these two major population centers that
okay.
will be big on this thing?
Aiken's from St. Louis, right? From the St. Louis area.
Okay.
That's where he's going to have to score big. Watch that
he'll
on election
basically. He'll have to do better in St. Louis than Republicans traditionally
right,
do.
Right, because that's his area, the suburbs of St. Louis.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, and I'm sure Missouri, if you look at it, probably a lot of these areas outside of the two major cities used to be more Democratic. Now they've become more Republican. They're probably a lot like a lot of the rural South, but there's just not that big a population base there. So all that'll come into effect. Well, it seems like this is a continuing trend. You know, we had the candidate in Indiana, and then now we had Ted Cruz. Now this race. Florida's coming up Tuesday, but I don't think there's any way Connie Mack won't win that primary
no.
instead of some
no.
right-wing candidate that would be much easier to beat, although I don't think Bill Nelson needs the help as much. But then I guess the next one like this is going to be Wisconsin and Tommy Thompson. If he gets knocked off by Eric, and it's a candidate with an HV, and I'm not sure if you pronounce the H or you go straight to the V, but if that candidate's the more conservative candidate wins, that's going to hit Tammy Baldwin. It's almost like this year we've been able to pick our opponents, but we're not actually having to do it, right, Catherine?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Let me tell you real quick what to watch in Florida Tuesday night. That's the 7th district primary, Republican primary, John Micah, Sandy Adam. Adam is the Tea Party candidate. Micah is the establishment candidate. Two sitting Congress critters running against each other. Watch that.
Yes. Well, we'll discuss that and other things next week on the Code Zoo. I'm going to again thank Danny Grant running for Congress. Another great show, and we'll see you next week.
Sorry I was late. I won't be next time.
Good
night, everybody.
Guys. Good evening, everybody.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
With a strong and united
America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.